Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Authors on the Air, part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. And it's my pleasure today to have a really talented author that I think you're going to love, and that's Matt Goldman. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Jim. How are you?
Good. Good to see you.
Nice to see you.
For those who don't know Matt, he's a New York Times bestselling author. He's a playwright and Emmy Award-winning television writer for Seinfeld, Ellen, and other shows. His novel Gone to Dust, which I have on my shelf behind me here, was nominated for the Seamus, the Nero Award, and was a Lariat Adult Fiction Reading List selection. Matt lives in Minnesota with his wife, two dogs, two cats, and whichever children happen to be around. So that's a lot, but welcome, Matt.
Yeah, good to see you. I keep thinking I need to take that last part off my bio, but the kids keep showing up from time to time, so I've left it on.
As they do.
Yes.
Yeah, we're gonna talk to Matt today about his latest release, Still Waters. It's awesome cover too, by the way. His latest standalone, and we'll talk about your progression from the Neil Shapiro novels to your standalones, mm-hmm. but. I mean, I love the premise of this book. You've got two estranged siblings who come together after a tragic event. And yeah, things just kind of go not how they expect. So could you tell us a little bit about Still Waters?
Yeah, it does. It focuses on two siblings, Gabe and Liv Ullstrom, who are Irish twins. They're about a year apart. And they grew up on a resort in northern Minnesota. And they never got along. And as soon as they graduated high school, they got as far away as they could from each other. One went to New York, one went to Los Angeles, and they really are barely in each other's lives. And they have a brother named Mac, who's about half a generation older. And the book starts, this is not a spoiler because it's really how the book starts. They get a phone call from their brother's wife saying he has died of a seizure, completely unexpected. And out of nowhere, and they agree that they will go to the funeral in Chicago where Mac lives in a couple days. And 5 minutes after they get off the phone, they each get an email from their dead brother, Mac. And the email says, if I die, no matter what it looks like, it wasn't an accident, it wasn't natural, I was murdered. And how that happened was that Mac thought someone was trying to kill him. And so he put an email in his outbox to be scheduled the next day, telling his brother and sister of his suspicion. But every day he woke up alive, he bumped it to the next day. So when he was finally killed, the email sent. So it's really about Gabe and Liv, who do not get along, coming back for the funeral in Chicago, hearing some weird stuff about their brother, and they want to get to the bottom of it, and maybe about their family that they didn't know about. And so they go up to northern Minnesota for a memorial service, and that's where the bulk of the book takes place. Oh, thank you.
It's really well done. Publishers Weekly said, three-dimensional characters, authentic dialogue, Goldman's fans will eat this up. And the characters of Liv and Gabe, they just pull you right in, and they're so polar opposite. You want to root for them, but you can't quite trust them, How did you go about creating a set of characters like that?
Well, I've written a play about siblings. I've written about it in my TV work. I just find the sibling dynamic quite interesting. I haven't touched on it in my novels before. We grow up as these vulnerable little kids exposed to each other, our siblings. Our parents can't watch over us all the time. And you really kind of make your way or in the world that way. That's your first introduction. And so that pecking order, those dynamics between siblings are hard to change, and they will stick with you in adulthood. There's a line I had in that book that I ended up cutting out, but when Liv is being particularly hard on her brother Gabe, and another character says, how can you talk to him like that? He's a human being. And she says, he's not a human being, he's my brother. And I think we do look at our siblings in that way, that that everything is fair game with siblings because of something they did when they were three. So that's really where those characters come from.
Yeah. I love it. You know, one of the things I appreciate about your work is, and it relates to character again, is there are no secondary characters in your books. I mean, everybody is fully formed and fleshed. Even in Still Waters, you've got Ed, the caretaker, you know, the long-term caretaker there. I mean, he's very much a central part of this book. Mm-hmm. And even as a secondary character, I mean, he's very, very full formed. I mean, how do you do that? I mean, that's kind of a writer's secret, but you do it very well and bring these characters all into play.
Oh, thank you. Thanks. Well, one is the attitude that there are no secondary characters. And the other is to flesh out a character. I don't think you have to spend a ton of time doing it, but a writer has to be somewhat precise about it and just layer it in little bits as that character is on the page, and just allow the reader to get to know them, and whether they like them or don't like them, that character should be consistent, hopefully a little entertaining, or pulls at someone's heart. But I just think, and I feel that way about everything, whether it's setting or little subplots, that they all deserve their fair share of page time, but not in a boring way. So you don't have to just describe what they're wearing. You can make them interesting, even if they don't get a lot of ink.
Yeah, that's very, very true. And you touched on setting there, and a lot of the book, you know, as you mentioned, takes place at these, you know, family resorts in the north part of the state. And it's kind of an East Coast thing that there's these family run resorts in New York and Minnesota. Right. Did you have any experience there? Because it sure seems like you were enmeshed in that.
Oh yeah, I mean, I grew up in Minnesota. That I spent tons of time at those kind of resorts. Still go to them. They're really culture here. Mm. People from the cities, if they don't have a cabin up north, they go to these resorts, or they did when they were kids, and they are a really big part of just the fabric of Minnesota, and especially northern Minnesota.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I pictured myself there, and you know, in your Neil Shapiro novels, I mean, that takes. You have a way of writing setting that I need to put on another layer of sweaters when I'm reading a Neil Shapiro novel, because it's freaking cold, you know. But it's really well done.
Thanks. When Gone to Dust, my first Neil Shapiro novel, went out for foreign publication, both Norway and Sweden passed because they said it was too Scandinavian. I'm not Scandinavian. I've never been to Scandinavia. I just wrote about Minnesota, which has a very Scandinavian culture. But yeah, the weather is part of it. And I feel quite honored that Sweden has published Nils, because it's up there on the shelves with the Scandinavian noir, which is a nice compliment.
That is a nice compliment. Now, you have a really interesting background as a television writer. How did that transition happen from TV to crime fiction novels, and how did that help you become the writer you are today?
Well, it happened. I've always been a big reader. I have always wanted to write books. I was never a big crime fiction person. In fact, I don't know if I had really read any crime fiction. And I was not happy with where television comedy was going. I thought, I think I'll try to write drama. And in doing my research to write a drama, I thought, well, I'll probably have to work on a police show or something. I started reading crime fiction. And, you know, what I wasn't happy about with comedy is that, you know, the dramas had become so cool with shows like The Sopranos and The Wire and Breaking Bad, and there's a whole long list of them. And they were getting all the attention, and they were the cool thing in Hollywood. So they tried to make the comedies cool, which translated, they tried to make the characters less flawed a little bit, which doesn't make any sense in comedy. And it lost its humanity for me. And then when I read crime fiction, and saw, oh, when you have a crime at the center of the story, when there's that built-in engine, it frees up time to really focus on character and focus on relationships, because the phone's going to ring and someone's going to say, we got the prints off the gun or whatever it is, and the things are going to move forward. And I found in crime fiction what I'd been missing, which was, it's a really wonderful genre to focus on the human element in all of us. And so I had a break between shows. I had 4 months, and I sat down and wrote Gone to Dust. And I think I'd been wanting to write a book for a long time, so I had a lot of pent-up book writing in me. And so it just kind of came out. And television has been very helpful. I mean, character development, dialogue,
right?
Relationships, arcing those, series architecture, almost everything except prose. TV has really been helpful for me, and especially story and pacing. That is something that I had to learn. It took a while, but I did work on over 500 episodes of television, and eventually it kind of sunk in. Yeah.
No, it does make sense, especially, yeah. And you know, even, you know, Publishers Weekly said, you know, the dialogue seems so authentic. Well, you've had that experience with, you know, television, and it's very dialogue forward. And, you know, that's where the bread and butter is. And it sure pays off in your crime fiction work. So that's amazing.
Oh, thank you. Thanks.
Yeah. Now, you broke in the crime fiction world with Gone to Dust and Neil's. And you had a series of novels there. And then the last couple of years, you kind of went and did a couple of standalones, starting with Carolina Moonset, which is still one of my favorites. It's just, it, you know, comparing to Neil's to what you did in Carolina Moonset, it's like, wow, you know, it's like two different worlds, two different feels. But the book was, well, I thought was fantastic.
Oh, so thank you.
How did you make that, or why did you make the switch between Neil's and standalones?
The reason I did is because my publisher told me to. They, honestly, but I was happy to do it. And so, you know, Carolina Moonset, I had some, first of all, my mom's side of the family is from Beaufort, South Carolina. So in my never ending, quest to be as lazy as I can about research, I wrote about a place I knew I'd been going to since I was a baby. And you know, one of the main characters in that suffers from Lewy body disease, which is a form of dementia that mostly goes after the short-term memory. And my father suffered from that. So that, all that, it was a few years after he had passed when he asked me to write a standalone. And that's where that book came from. And I love writing standalones. I want to write more Neil's too. So I'm talking to them about that. It's the number one question I get from book events and in emails is, when is Neil's coming back? And all I can say for sure is he'll be back in three chapters of my 2025 book. Which is called The Murder Show. Yeah, which hopefully that's setting up his return. Yes.
Yeah, because that was one of the questions I had is, you know, are we going to see more Neil's? But
one way or the other, we are going to see more Neil's. Yeah.
One way or the other. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the standalones have been very, very good, for the readers. I mean, it's this fresh, you know, story. And like Still Waters is, I mean, so vivid that, you know, it really kind of grabs the reader. So I think you've done yourself justice there. Now, can you tell us a little bit about the 2025 novel that you just kind of mentioned?
Yes, I can. And Forge is going to reveal the cover on May 1st. So
it's
my favorite cover ever. It's called The Murder Show. And it's about a TV writer, which I know a little bit about. Again, not wanting to do a lot of research. And it takes place during the writer's strike and the actor's strike that we just had. Ethan Harris is the showrunner and creator of a show called The Murder Show. And it's kind of on the bubble, as they say, and it's the strike, and he needs to come up with a really good fourth season, or he's afraid he's going to get canceled. So he comes home to hang out where he grew up in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. And while he's there, one of his high school friends, who has now become a cop, talks to him because when they were in high school, right after they graduated, a friend of theirs was killed in a hit and run. And she now has reason to believe that he was murdered. And it didn't happen in Minneapolis, so it's outside of her jurisdiction. But she talks Ethan into looking into it with her, saying, you know, you can use this, we can research it, and you can use the story for your show, which he desperately needs an idea. And so they start to look into this thing. And then, as these stories do, it kind of gets complicated and bigger and more dangerous. And yeah, I had a lot of fun writing that.
No, so, that sounds great. I'm looking forward to getting my hands on that too. So yeah, so May 1st, we'll have a cover on that one.
Yeah, May 1st we'll have a cover on the murder show.
Yeah, I got to hand it to you and Forge for the covers on these standalones. That they're very good, and like Carolina Moonset, there's a very subtle clue in the cover. That it had me look at after the end of the book. It's like, I'll be damned, it's right there. You know?
Yeah. So no, I am really grateful for Forge for a number of reasons, but their covers are right at the top of the list. They have done wonderful work on covers, and it's really nice. It's yeah. Nice when we're all, you know, a lot of us are read a big percentage in ebook, and there's nothing wrong with that. Or in libraries where they take the cover off the dust jacket, which that's also great. I'm grateful for libraries. But you know, when there's print books out there in the stores, it's really nice to have a nice cover.
Yeah, it does. It does make a difference, and it feels good to see it too.
Yeah,
when you find it. As we're finishing up here, I'm gonna do something that I call three quick hits, and it's
sure.
You know, your characters, and I ask you just a question, and you tell me, you know, what it is. It's gonna be difficult for you because I'm gonna put you on the spot since you've got Gabe and Liv. You've got to answer it from both perspectives, but it won't be. What are Gabe and Liv's favorite cocktail?
Gabe has invented a cocktail called the Gabeson. He's a bartender. He's a wannabe musician, but who's mostly a bartender. And he won't reveal the recipe for that, so neither can I. Liv is a martini. Blue cheese, stuffed olives, olives stuffed with blue cheese, martini. Gin.
Love it.
Yeah.
How about Gabe and Liv's favorite music?
Gabe is more like alt country, maybe the Avett Brothers, Jason Isbell, that kind of thing. And Liv likes to listen to old 40s music, the old crooners.
Got it. That fits. I could see that.
Yeah.
And finally, what are their biggest fears?
Gabe's biggest fear is just failure. He is someone who has kind of set his goals either way too high or way too low, so he has an excuse when he does not achieve, and doesn't feel that great about himself when he does achieve the low ones. And I think Liv's greatest fear is mediocrity. She just doesn't want to be what she perceives as regular, which probably wouldn't be a bad thing for her to be. So she's a little tightly wound.
Yeah, I would agree with that. No, those are great answers. And yeah, I can completely see those filling out with those characters. Folks, we've been talking with Matt Goldman. Matt's new book is Still Waters. You want to check this out. Everybody's loving it. It's going to be great. And The Murder Show, apparently, you're going to be seeing that up for pre-order real soon. So snag that one. Because Matt's books are a must-read, so you've got to get your hands on them. Matt, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, and hopefully I'll see you again on the road here soon.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Jim. And Pam, if you're listening, I hope you get better soon.
Take care, Matt.
Bye-bye.